This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
Welcome to the Indie Media Show on RTR FM 92.1. Before we go any further and even introduce who's in the studio, and there's quite a few of us, a huge thank you to Jeff for another excellent edition of On The Record. It's always such a brilliant show on a Monday morning. Jeff, giving you all the news that you need to start your week. He'll be back next week, but of course you can catch On The Record every weekday here at RTR FM. But as I said, this is the Indie Media Show. My name is Raymond Grenfell, and quite a few people in the studio today. We've got Ewan, Lulu, and Joni all joining us in the studio. How are we going,
Brahma.
Folks? And Brahma, of course.
G'day, folks.
How are you?
Do you want to say hello?
No. Lulu's saving her commentary for a bit later. And of course, I should... Yeah, sorry, Brahma. Brahma's in here, as always, keeping up the positive vibes. Quite a busy show this morning for you all. We're all feeling a bit... Well, at least I'm feeling a bit exhausted after the Recklink Cup yesterday. Massive respect to anyone who came down and all those that participated in that fantastic community event. But we've got a jam-packed show for you regardless. We're going to be having a bit of an update on the Save Smiths Beach campaign. You may have heard a couple of months ago we spoke to one of the organisers from the campaign about Save Smiths Beach and what's happening there. There's a long history to it, starting all the way back in the early 2000s, where many locals and campaigners spent a good 13 years trying to save Smiths Beach from development and were successful in doing that. However, more recently, it's coming under the threat of development. And so we're going to be catching up with one of the campaigners from Save Smiths Beach to find out what's happening and what people can do to get involved to preserve this precious part of our southwest ecosystem. Ewan.
I was daydreaming. Sorry, Ray.
It's all right. We're telling people what's on the show. We're also going to be chatting a bit about, a lot of sort of climate-related things, aren't we? We're going to be talking to some of the folks from the School Strike for Climate.
That's right. We've got Mina from School Strike for Climate. We're going to hear from Rob from the Say No to Scarborough Gas campaign, and also Sean from the Kimberley Frack Free Network to hear about the devilish projects underway and what we can do to stop them.
So yeah, all very important stuff. And as we were saying prior to the show, quite related but also different in a way, and the fact that those... all these developments are really, accelerating our climate catastrophe, but in different ways. And also, I guess, the School Strike for Climate is coming up very soon, so good to touch in with those folks. But to kick the show off this morning, I'm going to go to a track by Australian rock legends Bad Dreams, and this is from their Dogs at Bay release. And this is Hiding to Nothing. You're on the Indie Media Show on RTR FM 92.1, the sound alternative. And this is the Indie Media Show. Now, back in 2000, a large development was planned for the Smiths Beach hillside in the southwest of our state. A group of local residents rallied to create the Smiths Beach Action Group, who alerted the wider community, and together they took part in an epic battle that ensued for many, many years, becoming one of the biggest, really, that our state has seen. The campaign lasted for over 13 years and really sort of came to a head when it ended up at the doors of the Crime and Corruption Committee. It meant that at the time, the development was delayed, or at least the developer decided not to go ahead with the development. And really, for a lot of locals and everyone, everyone thought that that was it. Unfortunately, though, more recently, development is now threatening Smith's Beach again. So to chat about the issue, we're now joined by David Mitchell from the Save Smith's Beach campaign. Thanks very much for joining us this morning, David.
Thanks for having us on.
Now, as I mentioned there, this is a campaign that in one form or another has been going really since 2000, and there's a huge community campaign that many of our listeners would be aware of. What really has changed since that time, and is it a case that, you know, the campaign was won and then suddenly it's a sort of history repeating itself, or has this never really entirely gone away?
Well, the history is that back in the 2000s, there was a few processes that that the developer went through to get certain things through that the Crime Commission was looking at, and out of that process, a lot of awareness came on it, and the EPA, the WAPC, and the local council, they did a lot of investigations over those 13 years, and also working with that developer, they agreed on a set of rules and planning laws for the site. So before the 2000s, it was a bit of an open slather, but what luckily came out of that process was very clear laws of what can be developed, where it can be developed, and the main issue is one of the main issues is the footprint of the development. So, and this is our main issue with this current proposal. So the law is very clear down here. It states that the developer can develop 12.8 hectares, and there's a whole lot of other conditions like connecting to the main sewer and what have you. So, and this battle now is essentially all we're doing is trying to make this developer adhere to the law, actually. So we're not stopping development. We're not saying you can't do development. Listen, we agree that Smith's is a great tourist node and should have tourist accommodation, and we need better facilities down here because we have two toilets built in the 70s. You know, a lack of facilities for visitors. So we're definitely not against development. All we're trying to do is keep the developer to the law. And at this stage, he's wanting to push that law. And one of the major issues is the size, which is 30% larger. So he wants to increase it by over 4 hectares of land. So that's the main issue.
Yeah, it is quite an extensive development. Just looking at it, it's a 60-bedroom exclusive hotel, up to 60 large residential blocks, campground, bakery, cafes, restaurant, retail and shops, a whole bunch of things that have been proposed as a part of this development. And I imagine, you know, as you're saying there, it's the size and the extent of the development that's the issue. What kind of impact, I guess, could that have on the local ecology? I mean, this is obviously, you know, being a part of our southwest, it's a really sort of biodiverse hotspot. And I imagine there's, you know, a lot of you know, native species that would be potentially impacted on by such a huge development.
Yeah, and that's why the EPA this boundary I won't bore you, but there's basically a line that they can't go further west towards the point. And that boundary was developed by the EPA and the WAPC back in 2009 for that exact reason. They said there's regionally significant vegetation that should never be touched. They also, one of the big issues down here is visual impact. I mean, anyone that's been to Smith's, you only see a handful of buildings at the moment from the beach. But with this development, you will end up seeing over 160 buildings. And one of the issues to keep it in that certain area is to reduce that visual impact, especially from the beach. So the ecology side, I mean, the EPA's report's very clear on what they should be doing and what the law states they should be doing. And that's one of our major issues that they, and as part of the development, they have to give up an area of 21 hectares to National Park. Now, this extra 4 hectares they want to develop for private housing in the hotel is actually already an approved National Park. And the reason it's a National Park is because of the ecology in that area. So it's a great concern to all of us.
We're speaking to David Mitchell from the Save Smith's Beach campaign, or the Save Smith's Beach Action Group. Now, David, as you said there, you're really trying to hold the developer Hesperia to account and ensure that they follow policies and laws and actually make sure this development fits in within that. There has been a real resurgence of the campaign, a whole bunch of new people getting involved. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how locals have responded to the threat of this, you know, extension sense of development and how the campaign's going in that regard? How much community support have you received?
Oh, it's been immense. I mean, we've only started less than 4 months ago. We've got, 3,500 followers. We've had packed events down here. And I think the response has basically been because no one had heard anything. This developer had been working in the back rooms for 3 years. He often states in public he's spoken to 200 people in the southwest. Well, I've found three of them. Out of the 15 people that live in the bay, he hasn't spoken to one of us. And many people in Yelling Up and Dunsborough had no idea. And that's one of the reasons it's really kicked off in such a momentous way. Developers keeping things from the public only arises suspicion and what even arises more suspicion, and I don't know whether you've been following it on your program, but this new planning pathway, this short-track COVID planning pathway, allows, this is what the issue is, it allows the developer to break these laws. So he wanted to keep it as quiet as possible so no one knew. When we happened to find out about it in May this year, we were couldn't quite understand how he'd been working for 3 years on such a significant development and not even contacted any of the locals.
You're referring to the fast track program that's been instituted for under the COVID-19 pandemic by the state government, and I guess there has been unfortunately a lot of developments really rushed through and pushed through and perhaps some dodgy developers capitalizing on that. I guess just finally, David, if our listeners are concerned, they perhaps have a connection to the area, or they just don't want to see such a extensive development put the area at risk, what can people do to support the campaign and to get involved?
At the moment, we're in a bit of a holding pattern, so there's nothing in terms of actually writing letters or what have you yet, but the biggest one is really just to follow us on the socials, on Instagram with @save_smithbeach and on Facebook. We're keeping everyone up to date on where things are at. We're also running community events at the markets down here fortnight to make sure we've effectively taken over the community consultation of the developer. So just follow us online. But later in the year, there will be requirements to respond to the EPA and the WAPC. But at the moment, it's really just doing some research on and following us. So we're providing a lot of information of the basics. And, it's just we will keep in touch with everyone through them. And then we're assuming by the start of next year, it's all really going to kick off. So that's kind of when we'll probably be out asking for people to sign and let people be heard.
We've been speaking to David Mitchell from the Save Smiths Beach Action Group. Thanks so much for speaking to us this morning, David.
No worries. My pleasure.
And you're on the Indie Media Show on RTR FM 92.1. We'll be back shortly talking a bit about a school strike for climate. Right now, though, here is MSOL with Bomb Blast.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
You are listening to Indie Media on RTR FM 92.1, and you just heard Bomb Blast by MSOL. And we're about to chat to Mina from School Strike for Climate. How are you, Mina?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good. So you guys have an action planned this Friday.
Yeah, we do. It's pretty exciting. Do you want me to elaborate on it?
Yeah, tell us all about it. So when is it? Where is it?
Okay, so the action this Friday is going to be at Parliament House, and it starts at 11 a.m. We'll be having live music at the beginning, so you can maybe rock up a bit early and we'll be probably playing.
Nice.
And basically this strike is going to be focusing on basically youth power and youth voting, because in our past strikes we have kind of asked a lot from the government and kind of phrased it as in our future is in their hands and we need them to act. But hopefully with the strike, we'll be highlighting the fact that a lot of young people are now of voting age and so now do have some political sway. And so we're kind of going to use it as a warning call to the government so that they kind of get their act together so that we have actual action on climate change.
Yeah, excellent. Do you have any other demands?
Yeah, so basically our climate strike, or like all climate strikes in School Strike for Climate over Australia, kind of all demand the same three things, which is no new coal, oil and gas projects, including the Adani mine, 100% renewable energy generations and exports by 2030, and we want people, like the government, to fund a just transition and job creation for all fossil fuel workers and their communities, so that no one gets left behind in the transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy.
And this is a strike, so you're calling on students to not go to school, and also I guess for supporters and others to not go to work and participate in the strike. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how important is the strike aspect of this action?
Yeah, well, basically, we want to cause disruption on the day. We don't want business to be as usual. We want people to want to inconvenience to a degree so that people pay attention and listen to us, which I think is really important. So, yeah, we are calling on students and people to take the day off work, take the day off school to come to this strike. And I think in the long-term run, it is definitely worth it. Like, it's one day of education compared to, I don't know, our entire future. And so I do think it is necessary for us to strike for this action to make the statement we want to make.
And I guess also historically the importance of striking. I mean, you mentioned there that you're encouraging young people to vote. Unfortunately, here in WA, we have a situation where it seems both major political parties are very much in bed with fossil fuel companies, and even the McGowan government is really pushing this COVID-led recovery to be all about the expansion of the gas industry. So is that a part of it, the fact that, you know, striking in itself is an effective and useful political action, especially when, you know, you don't have a lot of hope in regard to voting for the two major parties?
Yeah, it is kind of a hard situation where we do have two parties that are, like, frankly, not too different on their climate policies. And so currently with Western Australia, even with a Labor majority government, we do have a lot of gas projects, including the Burrup Hub, which is by Woodside, which is incredibly damaging and will put in danger, like, 1,000-year-old rock art and stuff. And so that's also what we'll be focusing on in the strike, which is Burrup Hub, which is pretty dangerous. And yeah, I think it is important to, like, realise that both parties do have problems when it comes to fossil fuels.
In terms of the youth voting, do you have a party or any candidates that you want to direct young people to vote for?
No, because School Strike for Climate is, like, by principle, nonpartisan. So that means we don't actually align ourselves with any political party. And so more what we do is, like, urge people to vote for climate. So we don't actually direct anyone to any political parties, but what we have done in the past is give out climate scorecards or just inform people of the parties with better climate policy.
Thanks, Mina. I just had a question about, I guess, what's the vibe like amongst the youth, people under the age of 18 who can't vote, whose voices are typically only really heard in these school strikes and other protest movements? Is there a momentum building to fight for the future? How's the vibe?
I think the vibe is generally really positive. Like, I think in these activist spaces, it is really kind of, like, nice to have like-minded people that you can talk to, and kind of, like, they kind of just get what you're fighting for. And so I think being in School Strike for Climate has been really good for me socially, and I think a lot of other strikers, because we can connect with like-minded people and, like, have a generally good time, even though sometimes, like, strike organizing can be pretty stressful.
Yeah. On that, do you have any suggestions for parents or students for how to deal with responses from schools? Because I have a friend who got in a lot of trouble for doing this strike, and their parent was jumping down the principal's throats and everything like that. Do you have any suggestions for how to deal with schools and their responses to this?
Well, for my school specifically, I actually got them to give permission to go to the strike, which was actually really cool. And so our school kind of almost supported the strike, but, like, in a way. And I think for non-supportive schools, honestly, if you can't get your school to change, like, their mind or whatever, I would recommend maybe just calling in a sick day. But if you can, just like emphasize the importance of the strike and how it is actually education in itself. And by going to the strike, you're getting real world education that you probably couldn't get in a classroom.
Absolutely. So how can people get involved with School Strike for Climate?
So if you want to join local organisers for Western Australia, or just, for example, we're looking for people over 16 to help marshal the strike or do pack up, you can head to our Instagram, which is schoolstrikeforclimate_WA, and you can just DM us and we'll probably respond. That would be really awesome if you could. And if you want to also, you could go to our website, which is schoolstrikeforclimate.com, and there is a join like page that you can sign up to.
Great. And just quickly, who's playing?
Who's playing? We have Fluent, who is a Noongar rapper and does some really cool stuff, and he'll also be speaking. And we have an alternative band called Post No Bills.
Great. And so that is 11 a.m. this Friday. And that's a national action, yeah?
So all the states that don't have COVID restrictions are hopefully doing in-person events. And then for states like Sydney and Melbourne that do still have like active COVID cases, they're having online events and workshops.
Yeah, excellent. Cool. We'll wrap it up there. Thanks, Mina.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
We've just been chatting to Mina from the School Strike for Climate here on Indie Media. We are about to chat to Frack Free Kimberly after this track. This is Sunset Dreaming by Birds.
You're listening to the Indie Media Podcast, first broadcast on RTRFM 92.1.
You are tuned to RTRFM 92.1. That was Sunset Dreaming by Birds. This is the Indie Media Program, and we're about to chat to Sean from Frack Free Kimberly. How are you, Sean?
Yes, good morning. How are you going? And good morning, listeners.
Yeah, good.
Sean, you in here. Tell us a bit about what's happening up there in the Kimberley. We've just had a bit of news come through that the McGowan government have granted an exemption for a US-based, a Texan-based fracking company to be able to export gas from the Kimberley.
Yeah, that's right, Ewan. So previously the government had a policy in place called the Domestic Gas Policy, which reserved onshore gas for the domestic market in Western Australia for future years, so that there was a sort of a guaranteed gas into the future. That also held back a lot of these companies up here in the Kimberley from being able to export their gas, which is what they need to do to get the Kimberley off the ground, or the Canning Basin off the ground in regards to the fracking landscape. The other day, just last Thursday there, the government has made an agreement with the gas company, one of the gas companies, the Texan Frackers, which is Black Mountain Oil and Gas, to allow them to export gas from Western Australia. But in doing that, they'll have to build a pipeline from out near Fitzroy Crossing and then down into the Dampier Bunbury pipeline. And in doing that, it'll also open up all the other fracking fields or the other fracking companies along that would run alongside that pipeline. So we have also Buru Energy, who are now tied in with Origin Energy, which bring a massive amount of capital to the Kimberley. Then we've got other companies like Fear Energy, a little bit further in the southeastern Kimberley there. That would allow them to then tap into the pipeline. And also we believe that the government doing this would also, they would not be able to say no to companies like Fear Energy, who are also under the same domestic gas agreement. Their situation is no different to Black Mountain Oil and Gas, and so therefore we believe the policy is now defunct, really. So the government is still using it as a domestic gas policy, but theoretically it no longer has any ground. Essentially, they've killed the policy.
I think people could be forgiven for getting a bit confused here. As the McGowan government were campaigning to come into government and defeat the Barnett government, we had a moratorium on fracking. That seems to have been lifted with the condition that any gas produced would be for the domestic market. Now, that seems to have been lifted. And we're now looking down the barrel of a pipeline stretching a really quite a colossal distance from the Kimberley to the Pilbara. enabling fracking companies to do their work across that whole geographic extent. What is going on? I mean, we're in a climate crisis. The International Energy Agency has said that we cannot have any more fossil fuel developments. The school strikers are rising up, demanding no new fossil fuels. How is this working? How is it happening that governments are approving and changing their minds so quickly?
Absolutely, Ewan. It's an absolute shock to us, really. You know, the Canning Basin, basically up here in the Kimberley, if it was to be fully exploited for its gas resources, we've got figures that show us that that would be double the whole of Australia's carbon budget under the agreement that we're signatories of. So it dumbfounds us, really. Like, unbelievable. How could they go ahead and open up the Kimberley as a massive gas field? It's known as the eighth largest onshore gas basin in the world, and let off such a carbon bomb in such times. We're as shocked as anybody. We really didn't think we'd end up down this path. We now also wonder whether we can trust the idea that the government's locked in only certain leases here in the Kimberley for fracking, and if the companies will not be lobbying the government to also get that altered since the moratorium. Meanwhile, protect the Perth, Peel and South West regions from fracking and allow the Kimberley landscape to be industrialised to this extent is it's absolutely disgraceful, really. I'm so disappointed.
So we have the power, I guess, of multinational fossil fuel companies versus local communities, including Aboriginal communities and native title holders across that geographic extent. Could you tell us a little bit about, the setting there of native title and Ilua negotiations?
Sure. So a couple of companies have secured ILUAs with different PBCs, prescribed body corporates or native title areas. There's many also that are against the idea of fracking the Kimberley. We have people like the Nyingana people, the Mungala people, who stand up extremely strong against fracking. We've got the Yawuru people, like Mikola Corpus, who's been standing up against fracking since 2012, and something like a 96% vote against fracking was from the Yawuru people back in the previous push back in 2015. So it's absolutely not as the government and as the companies put it, that all the traditional owners are on side. That is not the case at all. And we're there to support any of the traditional owners that do want to stand up to protect their country and support them in other ways also in going ahead with sustainable development and sustainable ideas into the future.
So, I mean, what can we do about this? What can people based in Perth or even, you know, more broadly, this show extends across the internet and the airwaves internationally even, what can we do to rally around and protect the Kimberley and protect a fossil fuel free future?
Yep, certainly. So as it happens here before, James Price Point was a done deal back in the day. We will stand up against this large scale gas production across the Kimberley. We will get a lot of people that join in with us. People don't want to see the Kimberley fracked. They certainly don't want to see the Kimberley turned into an industrialised landscape. Look out for that one in the future as we build opposition to this proposal. At the same time, you can call Mark McGowan. You can call Mark McGowan's office, give him a phone call, let him know you're against fracking the Kimberley. The Kimberley's too precious for such a ridiculous polluting industry. So you can call Mark McGowan at 086552 5000. Let Mark know that you're against this idea. Keep an eye on things like Frack Free Kimberley Community Facebook and Frack Free WA Facebook, and support those groups and support groups like Lock the Gate. Get involved heavily there, and certainly with future actions coming up. There will be actions in Perth over the summer, and we had a big concert here just recently in Broome, 2,500 people attended. We'll be intending next year to ramp that up and build opposition to such a ridiculous proposal.
Often I feel on this show that we cover all these issues, they come at us from all angles, and it seems like a never-ending onslaught of things to rally against, to fight against, or to fight for. But I think Mina touched on something quite important in the previous interview, and I guess we'll talk about it in our next interview coming up as well, is that getting involved in these things is actually a really beneficial and positive thing for our mental health, as we can sometimes get a bit in the doldrums, a bit down about the state of the world. Act, belong, commit is one of the government's catchcries around mental health. And well, you can, right? You can take action with a group. You can join them and go to meetings and get involved. And you can commit to doing something as part of it. So How is the Broome community faring and getting involved, or the Kimberley community, I suppose, getting involved in this campaign?
Oh, that's right. We've seen a massive increase just in the last few months. If you drive around Broome today, you'll see a lot of frack-free Kimberley triangles on motor cars. You'll see a lot of frack-free Kimberley triangles on fences and on gates. A lot of people in Broome don't want to see this occur to the region, as, like I said previously, with James Price Point. We'll get a lot of people to future up-and-coming events. And, in fact, this coming Sunday, we've got an event at Entrance Point where we'll be down there for a photo shoot, a banner shoot. There's lots of really positive things people can do in regards to writing letters to the government. We've just recently ran a letter-writing workshop. We intend to ramp all that up, really. And like you said, it's a really positive thing. You do get a lot out of it when you, instead of just all the negativity all the time, yeah, actually being involved with community and pushing back in things to protect special places, you know, like the Kimberley and the Canning Basin itself, not only just its water, but like I said, all the industrialisation concept right across such a huge region is shocking. But to get the positive angle of that, yeah, join a community group, get involved. You can certainly do that around Broome and join in with us, get in touch with us, and we'll certainly be there to support you and to support all the ideas that can, creative ideas that can go forward to develop the opposition and the pushback. Yeah, really important.
There's a lot of really amazing stories coming out of the Muttawarra protection movement as well. The Kimberley Aboriginal people rallying to support, to protect the Fitzroy River, which is known as Muttawarra. So it's really a beautiful thing to be part of. And I just want to say thank you very much to Sean Clark from Frack Free WA's Kimberley chapter and everybody up there who are getting involved and the people we're also down here in Perth. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks so much, Ewan. And Frack Free Kimberley, mate, say no to fracking. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Sean, and cheers to Ewan. This is the Indie Media Show on RTRFM 92.1. Going to go to a track now. This is Capital by Amel and the Sniffers.
Amel and the Sniffers on RTRFM 92.1 with their track Capital, and this is the Indie Media Show with Joni, Ray, Ewan, Lulu and Brahma with you until 12 noon when Out to Lunch comes on your radio. Right now, we're going to chat about the Say No to Scarborough Gas campaign. Ewan?
So there's a community movement building to...
A quick weather report by Lulu. There's a bit of weather,
Thank you, Lulu.
A bit of sun and a bit of rain coming today. So just a quick impromptu weather report. Thanks very much, Lulu.
Brilliant, boss. Keep it up the good work, mate. There's a community campaign building to oppose the Scarborough Gas project, and we are joined today by one of the people involved. Rob, thanks for joining us.
Unfortunately, we've lost Rob there. We were going to talk to him a bit about the Say No to Scarborough Gas campaign, and hopefully we can get him back on the line in a moment. The campaign is really sort of arcing up. If you haven't heard of it, it's about the expansion of gas in the Burrup Peninsula. There's been a whole bunch of events around this, and it's all happening because of the sort of COVID response, really, and McGowan's push to expand the gas industry in our state to supposedly boost our economy. But it's going to have a huge impact on that region and, of course, accelerate climate change.
Some of the figures are that if the Scarborough gas field, it's a new offshore development of the similar scale to what has been driving the gas production in the Pilbara for the last couple of decades, would be akin to 1.5 times the scale of the Adani project's gas emissions and effectively make it impossible for Australia to meet our Paris Agreement targets. Although, of course, the spin coming from companies and governments will say otherwise. The fact is that it's all about how many grams or kilograms of carbon are going into the atmosphere. And this project and its downstream effects, scope 3, burning of the fuels, is absolutely disastrous, not to mention the impact on the rock art and cultural values of the incredible Burrup Peninsula, Murujuga.
That's something that, it shouldn't be not mentioned, because that rock art itself, I saw a quote recently, like it's the equivalent of putting heavy industry right next to Stonehenge. I mean, we're talking about an area where there is the first ever recorded depiction of a circle in human history in the Burrup Peninsula, And a lot of that, you know, rock art has already been destroyed by a lot of the development up there. And this development just is, you know, further going to be threatening that rock art. So it's a very important campaign to be aware of and to be conscious of and to get involved in. And I guess we've, you know, probably run out of time this week to talk to Rob, but we will get someone on the program very shortly. But there is an important action coming up very, very shortly, Ewan.
Yeah, essentially, government have given all the approvals for this to happen. In fact, they kind of want it to happen. So there's not really much hope there for lobbying government to oppose this, you know, massive expansion of the industrialisation and onward gas projects. Most of it's going to come from community. Well, it's going to come from community opposition and targeting, you know, the investors and Woodside themselves. Of course, Woodside are one of the most significant donors to both Labor and Liberal parties. So really, government are utterly beholden to these fossil fuel companies. So it really is up to us to get involved. And one, you know, the major opportunity coming up now is this weekend, in fact, on the 17th of October. That's on Sunday. So, you know, it's a Sabbath. Nobody should be working. Get along to, it's the Uniting Church in the city, the Wesley Church there.
William Street.
William Street in the city. At 10 o'clock, from 10 till 12:30, the Say No to Scarborough campaign will be holding a really open town hall style meeting where everybody can learn the details of what's proposed and also workshop and work together on how we will respond as a community. And really, there is, I'm told that there is something for anybody to be involved with. And as we kind of touched on earlier, and Mina brought it to the show, to get through any kind of feelings, you know, people probably listening to this show shaking their heads and in disappointment to all these developments going on in the face of a climate emergency, getting involved is one of the best ways to deal with our own mental health and to make a real difference. It's the way that people always have through history. So this weekend on Sunday, 10 a.m. at the Uniting Church in the city at 97 William Street, you're going to find a whole bunch of friendly, like-minded people coming together to learn more about the Scarborough gas field development and to really build this campaign. I believe it's aiming to be akin to the massive Stop Adani campaign, the James Price Point campaigns that are really getting major traction and bring a lot of people to be involved in making the world a better place.
So apologies to Rob there from the Say No to Scarborough campaign. We'll try and have a follow-up interview next week. But for now, this is a track from Sprawl Ought.
Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
RTRFM 92.1, Sound Alternative, that was Sprawl with Ought. And we're wrapping up here for Indie Media. But we've got time for a couple of quick headlines. Ray?
So in Kashmir, two school teachers in the disputed region of Kashmir were killed last Thursday by masked gunmen in what is believed to be the seventh deadly attack against civilians within the past week. A militant group known as the Resistance Front claimed responsibility for the killings. Police say suspected militants have killed 27 civilians in Kashmir this year, where tensions have been steadily growing. In 2019, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi tightened control of Kashmir, and groups have also accused the Modi government of repression and severe human rights abuses in the region.
The Australian government will no longer hold asylum seekers on Manus Island after an agreement with Papua New Guinea. Camps there will be closed by the end of the year, but the approximately 100 migrants currently held will not be brought to Australia. Instead, they will be offered permanent residency in Papua New Guinea or moved to camps on Nauru.
The Wall Street Journal has revealed a small team of US Special Operations Forces and Marines have been secretly operating in Taiwan for at least a year to help train Taiwanese military forces for a possible conflict with China. This comes as the CIA has set up a new mission center focused solely on China. Last Thursday, CIA Director William Burns described China as the most important geopolitical threat facing the United States.
Back in Australia, and fatal shootings by police are on the rise nationwide, according to new data by the Australian Institute of Criminology. 16 of the 24 deaths in police custody in 2019-2020 were attributable to shootings, the highest since record-keeping began in 1989.
And in the United States, in Texas, a federal judge has temporarily blocked the state's near-total ban on abortions, granting the Justice Department's emergency request to halt the law while courts consider its legality. In his ruling, Judge Robert Pittman slammed the Texas ban's unconstitutionality, writing, "This court will not sanction one more day of this offensive deprivation of such an important right."
Back in Australia, and the use of spit hoods, a head restraint that has led to multiple Indigenous deaths in custody, has been banned by the South Australian government. Following the passing of Fellows Bill, named after Wayne Feller Morrison, who died in 2016 after being made to wear a spit hood by prison guards. And finally, a petition on the Australian Parliament website calling for gender-affirming surgeries to be covered by Medicare has received a massive amount of support. The petition, which is open to signatures until the 27th of October, has received over 130,000 signatures since it was posted. And that brings an end to the show.
Just quickly, I think we're going to have a little bit of a weather update from Lulu. Yeah?
Is it going to rain, Lulu?
That's the weather. Yes. The weather is... is unknown to us in these catastrophic climate times.
You'll just have to find out.
But thanks so much for tuning in today. If you've enjoyed the program, you can always restream it at rtrfm.com.au. It's also available as a podcast. You can also get along to our SoundCloud, listen to the individual interviews, and you can hit us up on social media if that's your thing, or just get in touch with us via the RTRFM offices. Thank you so much, Ewan, Lulu, Joni, Brahma.
Ray.
We'll be back next week.
But for now, you are going out to lunch with Rian Todd Hunter. Until 3 p.m. This has been Indie Media. And as we always say on the show, don't hate the media.
Become the media.
Yep, that's the plan. This is Small Man, Big Mouth by Minor Threat.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?